Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm managing editor Matt Goldberg, and with me today are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And Dave Trumbore.
Hello, hello.
Today we will be talking about the Oscars. We're only about 6 weeks away from the end of the year, but really there are only two films left that haven't screened for critics. That would be American Hustle and The Wolf of Wall Street. Everything else has been seen, and that has narrowed down the field or created some buzz where none had existed before. And so I am going to be not handing it over, but peppering our Oscar expert Adam with plenty of questions, trying to get updates not only in the Best Picture race, but also the other major categories: Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor and Actress, Best Screenplays, Best Director, and then maybe a smattering of the other categories. Spoiler alert, Gravity wins all the technical categories, and that should just about do it. So let's start off with a big category, though. Best Picture. Adam, where are we at with this? Like I said, we haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street. We haven't seen American Hustle, but you were telling us before, you were telling Dave and I before we started recording, that not since Million Dollar Baby has a film won Best Picture if it was released in December.
Yeah, the past few years, the films that have gone on to win Best Picture have been released in November, at least limited release. It kind of used to be that movies would wait until mid-December to have their big bow, and then you'd have that big kind of year-end push, but that gamble hasn't exactly paid off in recent years. We saw it with Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close and stuff like Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and a lot of that has to do with the voting groups and how they've changed their rules and pushed up voting deadlines and stuff. So now, like, the critics groups and stuff are voting earlier than before. But right now, it feels like it's a two-picture race. Again, it's very early, and there's a lot of positioning left to do. But it's 12 Years a Slave and Gravity have been the one and two for, I guess, since TIFF in September, since they both kind of blew up there. So those are basically the big two now. Captain Phillips is also kind of a major player, but right now it feels like, for the win at least, the two that everyone's talking about are 12 Years a Slave and Gravity.
Is Gravity really in the race? Is it really that neck and neck?
A lot of people are saying it's the front runner. I mean, it's pretty much, if you look at Oscar pundits and what they're saying, it's split right down the middle if they think Gravity's going to win or 12 Years a Slave is going to win.
See, that's interesting, because for me, when I look at the Oscar voters, I see them as folks who have a very limited amount of what they like. They don't like big space stuff. It took them, you know, for Lord of the Rings, it had to become one of the biggest franchises of all time. They waited till the entire trilogy was done to acknowledge it. They were very, and before that, the last fantasy film to win Best Picture was The Wizard of Oz. So they tend to take their time. And then we've had this discussion, is Gravity science fiction or not? The more important thing is, it takes place in outer space. And I don't know my Oscar history back to front, but I can't remember the last time a film that took place in outer space won Best Picture. And it's not to say, oh, there's a first time for everything, but it feels like a drama, a character-centric drama, in the sense of an ensemble. That,
yeah,
12 Years a Slave is the one.
I think that's the reason that the kind of sci-fi thing isn't hurting it, is that it does feel like a small character-centric drama, but it's also surrounded by this enormous technical achievement that is not going to be ignored. And, I mean, it's not just actors and directors who are voting in the Academy. You have production designers and visual effects artists and, you know, all kinds of different people are voting in the Academy for Best Picture, and Gravity would seem to be a hit with almost everyone.
Well, but what is, when you have all those other people, I guess I'm a little confused, because all those people vote every year, but there, would you say that Gravity is an Academy film? I just don't see it that way based on their past voting record, simply because of the setting, the special effects, and let's be fair, the story is simple. I like the story, but it is one that is, I like because of its simplicity, but perhaps that could be a strike against it. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think the best kind of thing you can point to as far as asking Academy history for Gravity would be Titanic. It's a It's a technical accomplishment. It's huge box office success, which is important in the Oscar race. It's not unimportant. I mean, you have to factor that in every year. And I think they're both like massive technical achievements. Story-wise, very simple stories, both films. And they're both films that caught on the zeitgeist. Everyone is talking about them. That's another... I mean, it kind of... Gravity ticks off all of these categories that the Oscars are looking for. It's not just... I mean, we've seen in the past, it's not just these stuffy people who only... I mean, occasionally they'll vote for something like The King's Speech, but then they'll give it to kind of like a fun-loving movie like Slumdog Millionaire or Lord of the Rings. So... Or even Gladiator, going back to those movies. So I think that Gravity, I don't look at it as like a space set science fiction movie. I look at it as a drama, like a character drama. And I think that's the way that most Oscar voters are looking at it.
Interesting. Because, all right, well, that's fair. I'm like, well, Adam, let me tell you how I know more about the Oscars than you do, even though I don't pay as much attention to it. No, it's surprising. I think that's good. I'm also interested in the smear campaigns because, like, that's the whole thing. It's like, what's going to bring it down? And looking at Gravity, and I remember when we saw it at TIFF, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. How can anyone dislike it? And some people really dislike it. I thought it was just, it soared high above, but it's a film where I do understand some of the backlash to it because I saw it with a friend in New York, and he hated it. He thought that the characters were, bland archetypes. The story was laughable. The science is bad. It's pretty, but come on. So, and some people have been bored. I'm surprised by people who were bored by it. I just think it's too aggressive to be boring. But I don't know. Then with 12 Years a Slave, that's been kind of interesting because I think, and Adam, you were pretty good at calling this ahead of time. It's like, what is the strike against this? Well, it's too brutal. That's the thing. If you strip away the brutality, or not even strip away the brutality, but it's making voters ask themselves, well, did it only affect me because of how brutal it was rather than the story? Is that an accurate assessment of what that they're trying to push on that front?
Honestly, it seems like the biggest hurdle 12 Years a Slave has to overcome is to get Academy voters to see it. All of the reviews out of TIFF talked about how devastating and how brutal and how heartbreaking it was, and that has apparently turned a lot of voters off. I mean, people like Mark Harris and Anthony Breznican have kind of railed against the critics who have kind of painted a target on its back, saying they've been speaking with Oscar voters who were like, oh, I don't know if I want to see that. It's not so much that, because it's not even that graphic. I saw it again this weekend, and there's really only two shots of kind of like graphicness. It's in the visceral nature of kind of McQueen's direction that it makes you feel it. But I think the biggest problem against it is the getting Academy voters to watch that movie, which has been a problem in the past. Academy voters, you know, by and large, are old white men, and they get sent these movies.
They might sympathize with the wrong character in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah. Well, they get these stacks of screeners, and it's which one am I going to watch first? Is it the one that everyone tells me is brutal and extremely hard to watch, or, you know, am I going to pop in Saving Mr. Banks and have a good old time?
So, well, let's move on to that. Is Saving Mr. Banks a rising contender?
It looks like it's kind of the blind side play, or the, you know, every year the, well, now that they've expanded the category, it seems that kind of a happy-go-lucky or a feel-good movie gets in there, and it feels like that's kind of the one. I know critics have been kind of mixed on it as a whole, but the Oscar pundits are still kind of putting it high. It also has the whole Hollywood patting itself on the back thing going for it, and we've seen that the Academy likes that as well with Argo and The Artist, and, you know, they enjoy congratulating themselves.
Sure. No, that's they definitely enjoy Hollywood movies about Hollywood. Let's talk about Saving Mr. Banks got some attention. What about, we have and another film that just opened was Out of the Furnace. What's been the reaction to that one?
Surprisingly not great. I was really looking forward to it, but, and granted, I haven't seen all of the reviews, but it looks like the critical response has been, I don't know, mixed to negative. With I know Chris Tapley at HitFix, he said that it's Christian Bale's best performance he's ever given, but he also said it's a very, very dark film, and it's a very tough film. So it kind of feels like that one's DOA as far as awards chances go. It, the embargo for it lifted, I think, 2 weeks ago, and I haven't really heard much about it in recent weeks.
So is this really as tough a year, then, as people have been saying? Because films have sort of been evacuating. I keep hearing it's such a tough year, such a tough year. But really, let's look at it. There's 12
years. Well, it is a tough year in the acting categories are really tough.
Okay, well, then that's a good clarification. That's a good clarification. Because when I hear tough year, I'm thinking of the Best Picture race. But go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, Best Picture, I mean, right now it feels like it's the top two. Again, we could see American Hustle could have a late surge. I know David O. Russell's getting ready to lock that in order for it to screen for New York Film Critics on December 2nd. And then Wolf of Wall Street, I mean, it took the Academy how long to give Scorsese an Oscar? So it kind of feels like his movies nowadays, like, they can get nominations, but they don't feel like ones that can kind of land the win. But I think out of, like, the ones we haven't seen, I could see American Hustle playing a spoiler, or Saving Mr. Banks coming up, you know, around the back. And then there's also smaller films like Nebraska and Her, All Is Lost, August Osage County.
And do you think that their success will start coming back to the box office rather than anything else?
How do you mean?
Well, you know, those films that you just named have screened for critics, but do you think that their chances in the Oscar race become more powerful if people go to see them? So a film that perhaps didn't have as much strength then sort of gets box office steroids.
Yeah, I think that Inside Llewyn Davis feels like it's the only one that could benefit from that. It just feels to me that, like, a movie like Nebraska is just too small to get. I mean, it's open and limited audiences, and I've heard it's very good, but it's very good. It doesn't feel like one that's gonna break box office bank. August Osage County, I feel like, could be one.
That's sort of the one I'm talking about. Like, August Osage County, or even, and I know it's fell flat with critics, but I can see people going for Secret Life of Walter Mitty on Christmas Day. It's like, oh, I mean, Ben Stiller draws them in. He can draw them in the right movie. And it's a feel-good kind of film. I mean, where does something like that land?
That one was kind of like Here and Gone at New York Film Festival.
Oh, I know it was Here and Gone. I was there. But what I'm saying, my question is that even when we talk about, like, ooh, Walter, you know, how important are critics in this thing?
Well, it's not. Walter Mitty doesn't come out until December 25th, and the Oscar deadline is like mid-January or beginning of January, so it's not really enough time to make an impact, I don't think. If Walter Mitty has a big opening weekend, that gives voters, like, what, 2 weeks of seeing the box office results of that. I feel like it needs something that's going to have, like, long legs in order to make an impact like that.
So maybe need something more like the critics to push it to the top of the DVD screener pile. That's what was needed, because critics at this point were just controlling the pile.
Yes.
Hooray! That's what I always dreamed of doing.
Controlling the pile?
Controlling the DVD screener pile.
I was just going to take that out of context.
I know you were. I know you were, but I wasn't going to let you. I wasn't going to let you have it.
Goldberg memes for everyone to enjoy.
Goldberg memes. Well, the internet must be really falling short on entertainment if that's where they have to go.
We've exhausted everything else.
Quick, get me some more cats. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so we are... All right, so that sort of petered out. And we come back to the Best Picture thing with two big left. But let's talk about the acting categories, because you say it's crazy with acting. What's up with Best Actor? Let's just start with the men in the Best Actor category.
Best Actor's tough, man. There's like, everyone seems to have the same five that are in, and it's Chiwetel for 12 Years a Slave, Robert Redford for All Is Lost, McConaughey for Dallas Buyers, Bruce Dern for Nebraska, and Tom Hanks for Captain Phillips. Of those five, I see Hanks being the most vulnerable. I think it's a strong performance, but and Captain Phillips is also, I mean, I think it will land Best Picture, Best Director nominations, but it feels like it's the most vulnerable because it came out a while ago and it's liable to be forgotten, and, you know, as heat for stuff like Inside Llewyn Davis and Her and stuff like that starts heating up, it feels like that's the one that might go by the wayside. But Hanks' performance in the last 10 minutes of that movie feels like it seals the deal for him getting a nomination there. But then on the fringe, you have people like Oscar Isaac, Michael B. Jordan, Forest Whitaker. It's a tough category. And of those five that I mentioned, like, apparently Jack Nicholson is working crazy hard behind the scenes campaigning for Bruce Dern. And, you know, Redford is a legend. Dern and Redford haven't won Oscars since the 70s. You know, the reconnaissance is in full swing, and him winning an Oscar feels like the perfect capper for that. And Dallas Buyers Club is certainly an excellent performance.
Please tell me you coined that term.
No, Mike Ryan did.
That was Mike Ryan. Yes. All right,
you'll get him next time.
Get him on the next actor renaissance. Next
yeah. Well, then of course there's Leo, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. From Wolf of Wall Street.
Please don't say that about Leonardo DiCaprio. At that point, you sound like you're on a red carpet. And then there's Leonardo DiCaprio, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. It's like, yeah, he's a fucking millionaire who with good looks. He'll be okay.
I'm talking in relation to the Oscars.
I understand.
He almost always gets nominations, but it's tough for him to win. And then
he's basically following in Scorsese's footsteps.
Basically, yes. Yeah. I feel like he's got to win one someday. He's just
It will. It's a matter, and that's the thing. It's a matter of when.
Yeah, and Wolf of Wall Street feels like it could be like the perfect vehicle for it in any other year. And then we haven't seen American Hustle, but Christian Bale is the lead in that. Joaquin Phoenix for Her, even though like Joaquin hates award season, you know, the Academy doesn't seem to mind.
They do not. But you said this in the past: the film that wins, if a film wins Best Picture, it usually picks up the Best Actor or Best Actress to go along with it. Like, there's usually that correlation. Is that correct?
Sometimes.
I mean, it didn't happen last year with Argo, obviously. But
I don't think I've ever said that. Maybe someone else.
You said that. You said that so much, because I noticed. No, because I remember, like, the year, like, with The Artist, and I was like, I don't know about Dujardin, and you were like, no, because of the film, you know, he's likely because the film is likely. And so doesn't Edgy4 have an edge because of 12 Years a Slave?
Yeah, and because it's such a powerful
film. Oh, yeah, that's fine. He's good. But what I'm saying is, yeah. It's an amazing, heart-rending performance that was very subtly played and incredibly moving. But, see, but that's the thing. This is the whole thing about the Oscar. I'm looking at it as the game. From quality.
Well, and it becomes very clear why Sony Pictures Classics decided to delay Foxcatcher to next year. Because, you know, if they release it this year, it gets lost in the shuffle of Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, because Steve Carell looked amazing in that trailer.
Wait. I just thought Bennett Miller needed more time. I just thought that was it.
That's what they said, yeah. And it could be too, but Bennett Miller is also on track to be one of, like, only, I think, three or four directors to have three movies in a row each get Best Picture nominations, because Miller did Capote and Moneyball with both got Best Picture, and he got Best Director nomination for Moneyball.
Yeah,
and we saw with Monuments Men moving as well, which, I mean, that may or may not have been because Clooney didn't really feel like it was an awards movie and wanted to do an awards push. But I mean, the acting categories are really, really crowded, and it's tough to, I mean, you look at that, she would tell McConaughey, Redford, Dern, Hanks, like, that is a crazy lineup, and any one of them could win.
Okay, well, at this point, see, that's the whole thing again, we are really far away, and it's the vaunted critics groups have not started weighing in yet, and they will decide one movie deserves to win, and then another movie will win.
Well, and we're also just at the very beginning. This is what, now that most of the movies have screened, now it becomes the positioning, which is all the politics and the dinners and the honorary.
Yay!
All the posturing of, like, of the, you know, the campaigners trying to get these movies and these actors in. So
this is where Weinstein earns his paycheck.
Exactly.
These couple of months. Yeah.
It really makes you feel good about being a movie fan, doesn't it?
That's what goes on. And then, I mean, you have people like Fassbender who booked himself a play in Australia so he wouldn't do it. I know Clooney doesn't do it anymore because it's tough work. I mean, you have to be out there. Meryl Streep doesn't do it anymore.
Or you could just be Melissa Leo and get yourself a poster to do it for you.
Yes, exactly.
That's what you should.
But in order to win these things, it really feels like you have to go through that process, which includes, you know, dinners and Q&As and screenings, and you're seeing it. Like, Gravity did a big push, and I mean, I don't fault them for doing it. It's, I mean, the studio's paying for it, and, you know, if you're really proud of the film, we've seen Cuarón and Bullock were out there a lot for Gravity. It's kind of quieted down for a little bit, but they'll be back.
See, and I think that's interesting too for movies that kind of get lost in the, you know, if they open at a, if they release in a weird time. Like I'm looking at Prisoners right now because we haven't mentioned them yet, but they had good reviews. I'm just kind of curious where they kind of enter into the conversation, or if they don't at all yet. For movies like that kind of opened between seasons or in a lull or things like that.
Yeah, I would say more Prisoners was kind of a non-starter. It got pretty good reviews, but it wasn't like an Oscar or like an award.
So just not awards.
I would say more, but to your point, a movie like Frances Ha or mm-hmm. Place Beyond the Pines or Mud, like
right.
this might be the first year in a while that a Sundance movie doesn't get in just because the best picture category is crowded. I mean, back in like June, July, everyone was sure that The Butler and Fruitvale mm-hmm. Station were both going to be best picture nominees, but that doesn't seem likely anymore. And that's where, you know, you see campaigns picking up, and it really is a game of, like, you know, Warner Brothers has Warner Brothers money and Fox Searchlight has Fox Searchlight money. So, or, you know, even the tiny studio that released Short Term 12, Brie Larson, is still a right. possibility for Best Actress, but it's an uphill battle when you don't have the money to put on those screenings and those Q&As and to get the candidate in the voters' minds, because you're appealing to like a huge academy of people, a bunch of people in LA, and you've got to get them to pay attention and to not just sit there and like look thumb through the screeners and just say, oh, I like this person, I'll vote for them.
Right.
So, you know, it's bringing, and that's the sad part about it, because people like Brie Larson or, you know, Greta Gerwig and Frances Ha is fantastic, or I think Place Beyond the Pines deserves screenplay consideration, but it's just tough when movies come out that early to keep it going when people like Harvey Weinstein are throwing money at everything.
And what's he throwing money at this year? Is it
they don't really have a huge contender. August Osage County would be their best bet. They're pushing Philomena pretty hard. Mandela is kind of a non-starter.
They're not gonna work with The Butler.
Oh yeah, and I guess The Butler too, but it doesn't really feel like they have a heavyweight like in the past, like The King's Speech or something like that.
Oh, Weinstein, your life is miserable. Who will you bully? Who will you bully now? But yeah, I guess that's crazy. Let's move on to Best Actress. How are the ladies doing? Oh God, that just sounded terrible. I will cut that. How are the ladies? You've got me in this. It's going on my pile. The pile meme.
How are the ladies?
I'm gonna blame Adam for this. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. Getting us into fucking shitty red carpet talk. I feel like we should be in the fucking E Studios right now.
I've never heard that on the red carpet before. I thought that was just a saying.
It's a saying on the red carpet, usually on E.
I'm sorry, Joan Rivers. I apologize to Joan Rivers.
You should apologize to Joan Rivers. She works really hard. I'm serious about that. Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. It's a good documentary. Check it out.
Yeah.
All right. Best Actress category. What's up?
This feels like the one that, I mean, if there is one category that has a clear winner, it's this one. It's Cate Blanchett, Blue Jasmine. I don't feel like anyone who has seen Blue Jasmine can not vote for her because it's an insane performance. But
over Sandra Bullock? I mean, I haven't seen her.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like I was the same way. I was like, oh, can she be really that good? But you see Blue Jasmine and you're just like, holy fuck. Like that is just a crazy performance.
I mean, I haven't seen everything yet this year. I still have movies to check out, but I don't think that's just the best actress. I think that's the best performance this year.
But Sandra Bullock is I would put her at number 2. She has a very, you know, strong shot. She's very well liked. Emma Thompson for Sam and Mr. Banks, definitely a contender. Judi Dench for Philomena. August Osage County is weird because they have like flip-flopped on what categories they're submitting people for. First it was Meryl Streep and actress and Julia Roberts in supporting, and then then they flipped that, and now I think it's both are going lead actress. I feel like of the two, Meryl Streep will probably get the nomination. But and then American Hustle, Amy Adams is lead. Brie Larson, Short Term 12 is something to consider.
And should
Adele,
be considered because she's amazing.
Yeah, from Blue is the Warmest Color, Adele, and I don't know how to say her last name.
XR. We're just going to call her Adele from now on.
Yeah, Adele has been picking up steam, and I think she could sneak in there, which would be great because she's fantastic in that movie. One movie that is kind of flying under the radar, and I think it's opening too late, is Labor Day. You know, Kate Winslet always gets nominated for everything. And she's one to look for in the Best Actress category, but it's one that, you know, it premiered at TIFF to positive reviews, but then it's just kind of gone quiet on the kind of circuit. So I'm interested to see how that one plays out, because I had like after TIFF, I pegged it as a best picture contender, possibly best director, best actress, supporting actor. But
yeah, but it's the one with the longest time though as well. It's like the longest time from a TIFF to a general release. And even then, it's not it's going to be a limited release and then going wide. But oh, you know what we haven't mentioned? I'm sorry, I mean to go back. Lone Survivor. I've been hearing good things about Lone Survivor. Where's that? Where are we with that one? Not for Best Actress category. It's probably not going to have a good chance there. But overall.
The response is positive. It depends on kind of how it plays to wider groups. They're definitely, I mean, you've seen Mark Wahlberg doing the Q&As with Peter Berg. They're on the circuit. They're definitely working for it. It's one to watch. It's kind of a latecomer. So we'll see how it fits into the larger picture. But I guess best picture, I would put it under consideration.
Wanted to mention because you said there's two films we haven't seen, and I know that Lone Survivor did play at AFI, but
yeah, and it's also screened for critics. They screened it for the Oscar pundits and the New York LA critics too.
Yeah, so it's out there, but it slipped my mind because it's coming out at the very end of the year, just like Labor Day.
Yeah, which is interesting. It kind of feels like those are kind of. It's every year we see these, you know, big films that we think are big potential ones coming out on like December like 25th or whatever, and they don't screen until close to then, and it's kind of like kind of feels like a last minute push that never really pans out, but we'll see.
So what about best supporting actor, unless you have anything more to add on best actress?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Enough Said is picking up steam a little bit in the acting categories. And I wouldn't be surprised to see James Gandolfini get a supporting actor nomination. Which, okay. I mean, he's very good in the film, but I think a lot of it has to do with his death as well, kind of honoring him, his legacy as an actor, which, you know, we've seen the Academy do before. And, I mean, I've been watching The Sopranos lately, and he's just so fantastic. I would not be upset over him getting in there.
No one's going to be grumbling about that. Also, it's a good performance. Like, that is the thing. It's like, why this one? It's a good one. You know, is it going to be the career-defining work? No, it's not. But it's a good performance. And like you said, Adam, it's a way of honoring his whole career.
Yeah.
So who else has a chance of being in the best supporting actor field?
Front runners for supporting actor right now, actually the front runner is Jared Leto for Dallas Buyers Club.
That's right, everyone. You live in a world where Jared Leto could win an Oscar.
Yes, he is excellent in.
It wasn't for playing Mark David Chapman.
No.
Surprisingly, but it was for playing an actual character instead of trying to pray off, like, oh, thank goodness we can get John Lennon's assassin.
Yes.
And murderer. Anyway, who else?
I would put at a close second Fassbender for 12 Years a Slave. Those seem to be the top two at the moment. Tom Hanks saving Mr. Banks from Captain Phillips. Barkhad Abdi, I think is his name, the Somalian actor who plays the kind of lead hijacker.
I'm the captain.
He's very good. Yeah, I'm the captain now. Okay. Gandolfini, Daniel Brühl from Rush.
Really, Rush is still in the game
for this one category. Yes. Well, and also I would put Rush in there for cinematography and score.
Oh yeah, cinematography for sure should be in there.
Yeah, and I think Hans Zimmer's score in that is his best of the year.
Of his 18 scores that he released this year.
But Brühl was one that came up around TIFF, and he was like one of like the top ones, but he's kind of faded from memory as of late. A lot of people are still putting David Oyelowo from The Butler in there. I'm not too sure about that. Personally, I think Jonah Hill, just watching the latest trailer for Wolf of Wall Street and how much Jonah Hill is in that movie and his performance, I think he could get in there. And then some people are mentioning John Goodman for Inside Llewyn Davis, Bradley Cooper, American Hustle, Matthew McConaughey, Mud, he could be a double nominee, just like Tom Hanks. As far as Prisoners, that seems like it's the only category where it's possible for Jake Gyllenhaal for a supporting actor. Personally, I would put Jackman over Jake Gyllenhaal for best actor in there, but it feels like, you know, some people are on the fringes talking about that. But and one for supporting actors, I forgot, Sally Hawkins for Blue Jasmine. She's one to look out for in supporting. Oh, yeah. We haven't got supporting actors.
You're already on supporting actors. Well, supporting actress is always an interesting category. I always find that when I'm putting together like my best of list every year, it's really hard to put supporting actress together. Like that niche, it's not even niche, it's just I have trouble finding five actresses who were in a supporting role and also excellent.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to the amount of roles available.
Oh, absolutely. And again, yeah. I also have trouble finding roles for older actresses for some reason. There aren't many of those. Yeah, so where are we with Best Supporting Actress, Adam?
Again, 12 Years a Slave, Lupita Nyong'o, who is excellent in that. Oprah Winfrey for The Butler. She seems like The Butler's best chance at winning an Oscar for that category.
Really?
I thought she was good in that movie.
No, she's not. She's a sad drunk, and then she's like, I'm going to be with my husband. It's such a boring... Oprah Winfrey's greatest contribution to The Butler is getting The Butler made, if you wanted The Butler to exist. Like, as someone who deserves an award for her performance, no. Her storyline is one of the strikes against the film. It's this... Ugh. Boy, really? I'm already angry. Ugh. I already have backlash. Let's skip ahead to Oscar night where I can just be angry.
Oprah Winfrey and Jared Leto, just to piss Matt off.
Actually, Jared Leto, that doesn't bother me. I just think that's fun. Bother you? Okay. No, because I've liked Leto for a long time. I think he's awesome in Panic Room. He is so much fun in that movie.
Yes.
Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream. Yeah, I have no problem with Leto. I have a problem with Oprah.
Got it.
Yeah. Maybe she can secret it into being. She'll just really affirm it. She'll just bring that Oscar win into existence.
Just start giving out Oscars to everybody. You get an Oscar. You get an Oscar.
If she gets nominated, that's you've just taken one of the jokes for the night.
Yes. Well, that's an easy joke. That'll be.
It's the easiest joke.
Well, speaking of giving away Oscars for getting a movie made, if 12 Years a Slave wins, Brad Pitt is the first listed producer on that movie. And I've heard a lot of people complaining about him, his performance being distracting in that movie. And he was in the movie in order to get it made. And if that's what it takes to get the movie made, that's fine by me. People saying like, oh, and of course they put Brad Pitt in there for a small role. I'm like, well, yeah, that's what they got the movie financed.
Yeah, that's a criticism that really bothered me. I heard a line, and it was reprinted in Vulture, but when I was at TIFF, I heard our New York Film Festival, it was, oh, he gave himself a role, and it would be like Megan Ellison getting to shoot Bin Laden in Zero Dark Thirty. And it wasn't a matter of like, when you're willing to step outside the film like that, like, oh, look at the producer doing this business, then you're not acknowledging that Brad Pitt had to be in the movie to get the movie made. Also, that person did exist. I know that we were like, you know, you throw history to the wind to tell the best story possible, but that guy was real, and he helped, and he was Canadian. Like, this is not, it's a real guy. This is how he's in the movie is exactly how, he's described by Northrop, except Northrop doesn't say he was the handsomest guy ever. Like, he doesn't say anything about the guy's looks. So Brad Pitt being handsome, the handsome savior, but that's how it happened. And yeah, to me, that's a very cynical little piece of criticism, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, because I'm with you. He has to be in it to get it made.
Sure, yeah, and that's completely fine with me. If that's what it takes, if you put Tom Cruise in that role, like, if this story gets to...
Well, then it would be bad, and that would have nothing to do with it.
But back to the supporting actress. Jennifer Lawrence for American Hustle, just because everyone loves Jennifer Lawrence, and she's a supporting performance in there. I think if anyone from August Osage County deserves a nomination, it's Margot Martindale for supporting actress. I think that's a possibility. Octavia Spencer in Fruitvale Station, like I said, Sally Hawkins in Blue Jasmine, Carey Mulligan for Inside Llewyn Davis. Again, it's kind of once you get down.
I mean, that's the thing. They're so. It's like, I have nothing against the actresses, but yeah, there's nothing like, oh man, these like Nyong'o. Yes, that is a legit performance. Hawkins.
Oh, and June Squibb. Did I say June Squibb?
No, you did not say June Squibb. June Squibb, yes, also deserves some love. Sally Hawkins
from Nebraska. June Squibb is in Nebraska. I should clarify.
But Mulligan, not really. Spencer, no. I'm sorry. Like, they're good actresses. Those aren't memorable performances. They're not even close. Martindale, again, because Best Supporting Actress is such a stretch, I'll be like, okay. But at some point, it really does feel like overreaching, not to be dismissive of those performances. But if you were talking about the caliber of a performance and the role with it that it exists within a picture, the strength of the Best Supporting Actress performances would not be on par with the strength of the Best Supporting Actor performances. And that's not a criticism against the women, that's a criticism against Hollywood and the kind of roles it has available for women.
Yeah, and I personally think Sarah Paulson deserves consideration for 12 Years a Slave. I think with her limited screen time, she does a lot in that movie that I think is excellent.
Best decanter there, thrower.
Yes. There are some people calling for Scarlett. They're saying, is Scarlett Johansson going to win for her for doing a voice? And I'm like, did Andy Serkis win for Gollum? Then no.
Yeah, really.
So.
I mean, hey, Fox Search, hey, Fox Searchlight, if you want to try to make it happen, more power to you. But I would not put a lot of money in that one.
Well, and also, it's widely known that Samantha Morton was on set and was that role opposite Joaquin Phoenix and Spike Jones after working in post-production on the cut. The relationship wasn't working and recast the role with Scarlett Johansson after the fact. So I feel like that only hurts the slim chance that it ever had of happening.
Yes. That's not great. It's an amazing performance, though. I will say this. From an Oscar perspective, no. From a viewer, from someone who doesn't care or doesn't vote in the Oscars, yeah, it's great. It's an amazing performance. So those are our major categories. Adam, what do you see?
Director.
What?
Director.
No. I'm sorry. Well, just okay. We can move on to director. It's
you just said those are our major categories.
Well, I was thinking acting wise, but my question will hold for best director.
No, you can. That's fine.
Well, the question is how much do you think those categories are going to shift? Do you think do you think we're going to see a lot of changes in all of these?
Or I think it's possible in best actor. I think. That's the one that's going to be the toughest, and that's the one that's going to be kind of the fighting. I think the supporting categories always have surprises when you have, you know, when people are like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. It's usually in the supporting categories, so those could see surprises or, you know, people coming out of nowhere. Again, we have, you know, some movies left to see and December left, so we'll see what happens there. But I think towards the top, it feels like, it's safe to pencil in Jared Leto and Michael Fassbender, though I would have said it was safe to pencil in Michael Fassbender for shame. I think it's safe to pencil
you
in...
You fool. Why are we even listening to you?
Lupita and June Squibb, possibly Oprah, for supporting actress. Best actor, I don't see how you don't nominate Patel or McConaughey. I think it's possible either Dern or Redford doesn't get in, but I think Chiwetel and McConaughey are pretty stuck there, and then Cate Blanchett and Sandra Bullock feel like they're pretty sure bets for best actress.
Okay, now the same question could be applied to best director, but let's go in with that one. What's happening there?
It's kind of, it mirrors the best picture race, and
does it? Does it really?
It does. Personally, right now I see a split happening. If Gravity wins best picture, I think they might give it to McQueen, and if 12 Years a Slave wins Best Picture, they might give it to Cuarón, but McQueen and Cuarón are 1 and 2, interchangeable at this point. I feel like Cuarón kind of has the edge because Gravity is just such a, like, a marvel of filmmaking magic. Like, he invented everything. So
he invented filmmaking for that film.
Yes.
The filmmaking didn't exist before Gravity.
Paul Greengrass is up there. Pretty safe bet for Captain Phillips. He was nominated for United 93. Well-respected guy, solid work there. David O. Russell for American Hustle, possibly. We haven't seen the movie
Russell
yet.
Russell for Hustle.
Coen Brothers.
That's going to be the slogan Davis, for his maybe. Campaign.
Russell for Hustle.
Yeah.
That's gonna be his slogan. All right.
I work for studio.
Alexander Payne has been picking up steam for Nebraska. That one seems like if there's any such thing as like a critical darling in this race, it's Nebraska or her. Those two have been kind of, you know, it's going to take the critics to carry those across the finish line.
Well, as you know, us critics are great at carrying stuff across the finish line. Yeah. Just fantastic at it. Like, we did it with The Social Network, and we did it with Zero Dark Thirty. I mean, we are on a roll. Go, critics.
Yeah, it's also going to be interesting to get into the... Well, I'll finish the best director, and then I'll get onto that. Coen Brothers, I think Scorsese is possible for Wolf of Wall Street. We'll see. I think Spike Jones is a good shot for her. He was nominated for Best Director for Adaptation and Being John Malkovich. And both were nominated for Best Picture. Or maybe he was just nominated for Best Director for Being John Malkovich, and Adaptation was Best Picture. Either way, he has history with the Academy. J.C. Shandor is a possibility for All Is Lost. Woody Allen for Blue Jasmine, always. But, you know, Woody doesn't play the Oscar game, so it's up to the voters to decide that. He doesn't show up, so. And then
it's
John
it's you know, it's music night, it's jazz night.
Yeah, yeah, he goes and plays jazz instead, which is totally fine.
It's incredibly fine. It's very cool, actually.
Yeah. Lee Daniels was early on towards the top of the heap, but he has you know, that movie The Butler has dwindled in favor, so, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock in him. Ryan Coogler, maybe. John Lee Hancock is a possibility. You know,
For Fruitvale and Saving Mr. Banks, respectively.
Yes, yes.
Just filling people in, Adam. No one ever
exactly.
knows.
But it's, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's a two-man race. It's Corona and McQueen. However, the rest of
stop telling yourself lies, America. It's just between Alfonso Cuarón and...
or Russ for the sneak attack. I mean, he has been on a roll. It feels like...
I can see him, like, backstage with a knife, like, just ready to shiv.
No, I mean, like, Spider was, like, his first taste at, like, real Oscar love. Like, that movie got a lot of love, and then last year was Silver Linings Playbook was another... I mean, that movie just felt like gunning for Oscar, and so, you know, it feels like they really like him. He really wants it. I think that American Hustle... If there's going to be something from December that throws a wrench into the race, I think it's going to be American Hustle.
Okay. So, and, although I would think it'd be cool. I mean, here's something to think. If Cuarón or McQueen win, it will be a historic win, simply because they'll either be the first Hispanic director to ever win Best Director, or the first African-British director to ever win Best Director.
That is correct.
So, right there. I mean, and I bring that up because the Academy is aware of social optics, are they not?
Yeah, and, I mean, we saw with... you know, the whole Brokeback Mountain thing, where everyone was basically like, they give it to Crash instead, and everyone was like, you hate gay people, and they're like, no, we can award, you know, interesting films too, and they give it to The Departed and No Country the next 2 years, which are two very tough, very non, like, kind of happy Hollywood-y movies. So, you know, they're very aware of what their vote means.
I hope they instead to the Brokeback Mountain crowd. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa! But we just voted for a film that's all about solving racism.
Yes,
this is a very anti-racism film. Look at that.
Paul Haggis fixed it, guys.
He fixed it, guys. By the way, as a side note, Sony Pictures Classic picked up his movie Third Person, and Adam, I know you are a real big fan of that one when you saw it.
It is honestly one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life, and I've seen a lot of movies. It is, oh my god. Don't, like, I wouldn't even recommend watching it.
We're going to devote the rest of the podcast now to saying how bad Third Person is.
Oh my god, it's so bad. It's so bad. I saw it at TIFF, and everyone afterwards was just, oh my god, that was a big piece of shit.
Good time. So there's a side note. Avoid Third Person. Moving on. So Best Director, all right, two-person race. Now let's move on to screenplay. And screenplay is an interesting category because it's two categories. It's Best Adapted and it's Best Original, which makes things even more, you know, something can be adapted even though it's such a loose adaptation. And then something can be original even if it's highly derivative and so on and so forth, but it does put more writers into play. So where are we with Best Adapted Screenplay?
You know, it's tough, and those categories change a lot. But you know, obviously, John Ridley for 12 Years a Slave is a
By the
contender.
Way, just as a side note, I love the fact that John Ridley is the screenwriter for Undercover Brother. I love that.
And Red Tails.
Red Tails was a movie that I liked, and very few people did. I liked Red Tails, and I love Undercover Brother. Undercover Brother is amazing. And, you know, his 12-year script is fine, too. But Undercover Brother is amazing. No, I actually... but also one of the cool things, and for people, if you haven't seen 12 Years a Slave yet, when you do, you'll notice, like, the dialogue, the cadence of it, and the way it's written is unique. It really is one of the... it's one of the many reasons the film works so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Captain Phillips, Billy
All
Ray.
Right. I expected you to join and go, yes, Matt, that was very wise commentary. And you're like, yeah, whatever, moving on.
Yeah, I agree.
Damn straight. All right, Captain Phillips, the guy wrote a book. And
Yeah, Before Midnight, which is best adapted because the Academy rules are stupid and any sequel is automatically an adapted, even though Before Midnight is not based on anything other than, you know, it's the same two characters from Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. But Before Sunset got an Oscar nomination, so, you know, pretty high that that will be that film's sole nomination. Again, another Sundance movie that is sadly left out of the Best Picture race, more than likely. August Osage County is a possibility. Tracy Letts, based on his own play.
And the movie being very similar to the play, almost exactly.
Yeah, save for, I mean, an hour is cut out, so there's a lot of stuff gone, but dialogue-wise.
Sure.
Wolf of Wall Street, written by Terrence Winter, who is the showrunner on Boardwalk Empire. Philomena is a possibility. Steve Coogan wrote that with Jeff Pope. That won the screenplay award at, I think the British, something British, some British awards.
That's some, actually the name of the ceremony. Okay. Some British award.
Some British
indubitably.
Labor Day, maybe, Short Term 12, Blue is the Warmest Color, The Hobbit. No. I'm kidding, guys.
No. remember a decade ago when those movies were just steamrolling at the Oscars? Okay. Is that it for Best Adapted?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not as up on the screenplay categories yet. So these are just
Jesus Christ, Adam, learn to prepare. Come on. It's like you don't know anything here.
It's true.
Do we even want to bother with Best Original?
We can. There are original is tough. There are a lot of great screenplays.
Now, is this one where you see that Gravity may not get in? Because, again, one of the things that's been ridiculed for is the simplicity of the story.
Yeah, it's possible. That's been one of the criticisms of it. I think it's still a contender, but, you know, we'll see. Again, this is where the negative campaigns come into play.
That's all I'm doing right now is I'm reciting negative campaigning. That's all I do.
And the,
Harvey
the
Weinstein feeds me an email and I read it off of it and that's how it works. Yeah.
Well, and the screenplay categories are tougher to predict because, you know, when it comes to predicting the nominees and stuff, you can usually look at the guilds, but the Writers Guild has such weird rules that a bunch of worthy screenplays are ruled ineligible every year. Like Tarantino is never eligible for the WGA award. So, so far, the landscape for Best Original Screenplay, you've got Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers, Woody Allen, Blue Jasmine, obviously. Saving Mr. Banks is a possibility. Kelly Marcel, Nebraska, which was written by Bob Nelson. Gravity, again. Spike Jonze for Her, I think that could be a possible nomination. I think American Hustle, David O. Russell, I think he...
Hustlin' still hustlin'.
Russell is hustling. You get Dallas Buyers Club, The Butler, Enough Said, Francis Ha, Fruitvale Station, Mud, Place Beyond the Pines, Prisoners, Rush.
Do you really think Place Beyond the Pines is still in it?
I know that Focus is. I mean, they have a campaign for it.
I have a screener for it. So.
If it gets anything, it's original screenplay, and I think that's a tough one. So
that's a shame.
It is a shame.
But that's what happens when you release your movie in March. So that's what you get, Focus. You had gold. Actually, they did. I mean, that's a tough... I think even if it had been released in the fall, it's like super competitive, and it's not like... You know, it's an epic film, but not in the... It's an epic character drama, which is a little harder for people. Like, if they want something epic, they want a big setting to go along with it.
Yeah.
A big canvas, if you will. All right. Sure. God. Oh, Oscar talk. By the way, I would just like to try it. Dave recommended this to us. And I appreciate that. I'm not blaming you.
Because I was like, I got nothing to talk about. And I didn't see anything this weekend. I don't think anybody else did either.
No, it's a good idea. Although,
Wolf of Wall Street was supposed to come out this weekend. So we could have been seeing the latest Scorsese movie.
That's right.
No, he had to be lazy.
That's right, Scorsese.
Lazy
this podcast.
Scorsese.
Lazy Scorsese and Russell.
Just sit around and come up with the rhyming names for all the Oscars.
We've become fucking Don King. That's our job now. For directors. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yes, this is what happens when we don't see The Best Man Holiday, which I'm sure is, I mean, it's very successful. I just didn't see it.
I've heard it's good.
I'm sure it is good. I have nothing against it. I just, none of us saw it.
Well, I did want to ask you guys, I mean, now is the time that, you know, Oscar pundits take a lot of shit for, you know, following the Oscars and stuff, but I know some of them, I mean, the good guys like Chris Stapley and stuff, know that they can at least shine light on contenders and stuff like that, so they try to do kind of for your considerations and stuff like that. So I was asking you guys if you had any performances or movies or screenplays or, you know, direction this year that you think is worthy of consideration that probably won't get anything.
Well, I don't know if it's not worth, if it won't get in. You can probably answer this, but is The Act of Killing in the game? Because for me, that should win everything.
For documentary, I mean, assuming the stupid
the documentary rules are so fucked up.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll see. Because I'm betting on that one. If I had to push anyone, it would be Short Term 12 for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Screenplay. Just a really wonderful film, and I hope they, Cinedigm is the, they're the ones who have it, and that really is David and Goliath right there with among independent studios. But if they can get Brie Larson into it, that'd be fantastic, because she is astounding. And to me, that's the thing. This is all the Oscar, you know, chest puffing and all that stuff is fine, whatever, let them play their game. But I've said before, the Oscars at their best, at a, from a pragmatic standpoint, they can help people, they can help careers, and do something for underseen films that didn't get a chance. So at this point, we've all seen Gravity, and so that already has its attention. And I'm not saying it doesn't deserve to win anything, but if Brie Larson gets nominated for Short Term 12, you're going to be like, what's this movie, Short Term 12? Like, they're going to want to be kind of completist about it, because the Oscars are a guide for a casual person. They're like, I didn't see all these movies this year, but if you're telling me this is among the best, okay, I'll check this out. And I really want people to see Short Term 12. So,
yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, if nothing else, for that reason, other than to bring kind of a spotlight to movies like that, Fruitvale Station. Fruitvale's done pretty well, at least on social media, of keeping, trying to keep it relevant. Because every, you know, every couple of days I see some quote or some, you know, small award or some recognition, and they try to keep it relevant. I don't know how much that's going to help when it comes to actual awards talk, but for me, who doesn't usually go to see these smaller sort of independent movies that are off the general audience radar, I did see both of those, surprisingly. So yeah, I'd love to see both of them get some love come awards time. Don't think it's going to happen. Adam, do you have anything, a list of animated movies? Have you been following that at all? I follow like more of the fringe type awards thing, so animated or anything with like technical achievements, which nobody gives a shit
who's
about.
Who is leading in best animated short?
Well, they released the list of the 19.
You didn't answer my question, Adam.
Some movie that no one's seen and no one's.
God damn it! All right, go on.
I actually probably get it worse, but yeah, we'll see. The Oscars released the list of 19 animated features that are going to be competing for Best Animated Feature, and it is the weakest list I've ever seen. It's just not a good year for animation.
Well, hey,
it's here. I'll read it. I'll read it quickly. Clyde with a Chance of Meatballs 2, The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Epic, Ernest and Celestine, The Fake, Free Birds, Frozen, Kumba, The Legend of Cirilla, A Letter to Momo, Monsters University, O Apostolo, Planes.
What?
Puella Magna.
Planes is an animated movie that exists. That's why it's on there.
Yes.
Sounds like, yeah.
Rio 2096, A Story of Love and Fear.
So this list is basically just...
Wait, did you say The Wind Rises?
The first two turbos.
Oh, you're still going
and
on.
And The Wind Rises. Yeah.
There's The Wind Rises.
Personally, for me, I quite enjoyed Monsters University and Clyde with a Chance of Meatballs 2, but I understand what you're saying when it's like an animated film, because those are both light, fun movies, although I think Monsters University does have some surprising depth to it.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. There's no like powerhouse, although it should be noted, at least for me, I haven't seen any of the foreign animated films.
Yeah, but there's no like Paranorman, or usually there's like three or four like studio contenders that are really like Wreck-It Ralph and Paranorman, like some like really good ones that throw some like contention in there. For me, the only ones, and I haven't seen Frozen, but I mean Monsters University and Clyde with a Chance of Meatballs 2, which I liked both of those movies, but I would not knock them up against the like best animated movies of the past 10 years.
I would I've heard Frozen is really good, though. I'm looking forward to seeing Frozen.
I have, yeah. I have, too. How to Train Your Dragon 2. Hopefully that one... Is that next year?
That's next year.
It should be next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're excited for that. And there's no Pixar movie.
No.
No.
Yeah, no Pixar movie next year.
Okay.
Year without a Pixar movie. I did want to
say... It's like a sad... It's like the title of a sad book. A year without a Pixar movie and, like, wind rustles. All right.
My four-year consideration pick is The World's End for Best Original Screenplay, and I genuinely think Simon Pegg deserves consideration for Best Actor. I thought he was phenomenal in that, and I just rewatched it this weekend, and it is some crazy nuanced work that he does in that movie to keep that manic energy up with, like, a layer of sadness underneath it. I mean, and especially for Best Original Screen, I wish that Focus Features would be pushing that more, because I was talking to someone recently. They had never seen any of the Cornetto trilogy movies, and I was like, the World's End, more than any other movie this year, you know, stayed with me, and I liked it better and better the more I thought about it. And they were like, really? Like, I haven't seen any of those movies. I just thought they were kind of parodies. And I was like, no. And I think there's a stigma with those movies that, like, people who haven't seen them, they're like, oh, they're parody movies. Like, they're parodying science fiction in this, and they're parodying action movies, and they're parodying horror movies, which could not be further from the truth. So I would be delighted to see Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg get an Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay.
Well, considering that screener wasn't in my packet from Focus Features, may not happen. But I absolutely agree. I think the technical craft of it is astounding. Unfortunately, they make the major sin of they make movies that make people laugh, and that's just you can't do that. It's not serious.
No comedies. This is the end. Best Picture. I would totally be behind that.
This is the end, Best Picture?
Yes.
Okay, I'm down. I'll go with that.
Honestly, if Danny McBride were nominated for Best Supporting Actor, yes, that would be amazing.
I mean, I'm being serious. Like,
no, I'm not disagreeing.
I would say This is the End is the funniest movie I've seen this year, and does that not... It's so annoying that doesn't get consideration. Like, a comedy is still a movie, even though it makes you laugh. Like, why?
I disagree.
Why does it not get consideration? It's annoying. Like, The World's End and This is the End.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like that. A film has to be at least it has to get super serious at some point. Like, The Artist is a comedy, but do you say ugh?
Yes, I hate The Artist.
Oh shit! That's so weird. It's like a trifle. Like, why do you hate it?
That's why I hate it, because it's so disposable and it's...
But
so,
like, but you only hate it because of, like, but that you're not... Your beef isn't really with The Artist then. It's with the Academy's love of The Artist.
Exactly. I'm
so why are you holding against the movie?
Because, I saw the movie and I was just like, ugh, like, that movie. Like, I will forget about that movie in 10 minutes.
So, see, this is where Oscar twists things, though. Because
it does, yeah.
On its own, I bet if you had seen The Artist at Cannes, where it premiered, and there's no Oscar talk or anything, I think you may have liked it a little more. But it creates it's this artificial reaction.
It's backlash.
It creates art. It's art. It's all artificial, which is so fucked up. The film is the film, isn't it? Like, that's the whole thing. We get upset at, or at least I do, get upset at Academy voters for being like, oh, why can't you just vote your conscience and just, you know, say what you like? But why can't we just like a film on its own merit? It has to carry all the Oscar baggage with it.
Yeah, when I saw The King's Speech, I was like, that was fine. And then once it started, like, picking up all the awards and beating The Social Network, which is amazing, I, like, started feeling hatred towards this movie that I had just generally liked just fine. But, you know, I felt angry that everyone was awarding this nothing movie over The Social Network.
Yeah, take that, movies. Awards,
yeah,
bring
movies,
nothing but pain.
Awards. Well, then that's where the... You know,
but to my original point, The Artist is pretty much a comedy. And it won.
Oh, it is, yeah.
But I'm with you. Like, in terms of performances that are comedic, one of the biggest standouts is Kevin Kline for A Fish Called Wanda, because it's not even like, oh, but there's like a sad... It's not like a moment where there's something really sad happens to him, you know, or to temper. It's like, no, it is just an outlandish, boorish, unforgettably hilarious character, and the Academy was like, you know what, that's worth an Oscar, and he got it.
Yeah.
Or Marissa Tomei, it's like, oh, she's such a dark horse. It's like, but she, you know, it's a really good performance, and she's hilarious. It's like, but she made people laugh, and movies aren't supposed to make people laugh. This is the Oscars, damn it.
Interestingly enough, for the Golden Globes, which they don't matter at all, but this just because we haven't seen these two movies. American Hustle is submitting as best drama, and Wolf of Wall Street is submitting as comedy. So
interesting.
Maybe that says something about the tone of the movies. I mean, all the clip we saw from American Hustle that came out last week was really funny, and then like the trailers look really funny. But maybe it takes a darker turn halfway through. We'll see. Russell stops hustling.
That's the subtitle for the movie. All right. Okay, so this is where we. This is the state of the race on November 16th. Or is it November 17th?
Are you in the past?
Oh, I'm in November. I got back from London yesterday, so. I've come to you from the future. I was 5 hours ahead. I could have told you guys so much was happening in 5 hours in the future. There was so much cool shit. I could have told you that Noah trailer was kind of disappointing, and I would not be interested in that movie if Darren Aronofsky was not directing it. Is that just me? That Noah trailer? Seriously?
I saw more responses like that. I thought it was fine, but it's probably Darren.
We're gonna Aronofsky. This is part two of the podcast. Now we're gonna do a whole hour on thoughts on the
on
Noah
Darren.
Just on the Noah trailer.
Oh.
Thoughts on the Noah trailer.
Well, when I click play, I was like, man, if this doesn't like devolve into just some crazy action movie, it might be okay. And then halfway through the trailer, it's just like, oh, crazy action scene. So I don't know. I'm still holding out.
Well, apparently, from people who've read the script, said that trailer is hiding in a big way.
Sure.
Apparently, it's a very weird movie.
I'm sure it is. I mean, to me, like
it is Darren Aronofsky.
It is. I mean, and it's really making fun of the trailer. Like that's the thing. Like
sure.
Darren Aronofsky, because without him, I'm like, wow, this is a very serious version of Evan Almighty.
Yeah.
Okay.
You spoiled the Morgan Freeman cameo. Damn it.
He's so dignified. All right. So if we're anything more, Adam, you know, you're our Oscar, you know, and people, if you want to keep up with what Adam has to say on the Oscars, keep checking in with the Oscar Beat column. So,
Oscar Beat,
it can't be beat.
Terrible.
Terrible.
You're the worst.
Oh my God.
I think Oscar Beat can't be beat is right up there with Russell is hustle. Russell
no, these are
hustle.
All going on your meme. I just have to find the best picture for it.
It have to be a meme. See, the joke is no one listens to this podcast. The only people who will get that meme are the 300. The only people who will get that meme are the 324 people who listen to this podcast.
But
everyone else
spread because that's what memes do. Doesn't have to make sense.
That is true. Memes don't have to make sense.
We'll get it on at midnight, and you'll be infamous.
Oh no.
Be all set.
No. All right. Let's move before I can dig myself any deeper. Then let's move on to recommendations. Adam, what do you got?
Not talk about memes? I thought we were going to do memes.
No, we're done. We're talking about recommendations. Move on.
Okay. I am recommending a former Best Picture nominee. Is the 1974 film The Conversation, written, produced, and directed by Francis Ford Coppola. This was his movie after The Godfather, a.k.a., you know, you make a lot of success and then you get to make your one for me, and this is what Coppola chose. It actually was nominated for Best Picture the same year as The Godfather Part 2. Coppola went straight from The Conversation into production on The Godfather Part 2 and turned out two fantastic movies. The Conversation is a psychological thriller starring Gene Hackman, who plays he's like a surveillance expert who runs his own company, and he's surveilling this couple for kind of like an unknown entity, and he's very good at manipulating the tape and like getting the audio clear. And it's almost quaint watching the movie now because of the equipment they used back then is so like big and it's on tape and so like hefty. But you know, for the time, it was very innovative and stuff. And basically, he's the best at what he does, and he records this conversation and then kind of feels that the conversation will be used for nefarious purposes. And due to an incident that happened in his past, he's reluctant to be responsible for harm to another person again. And it kind of devolves into this. It's a very 1970s thriller. It's very kind of mood heavy and a lot of kind of lingering camera moves. Edgar Wright tweeted last week that any movie released in the 70s would get a terrible cinema score, and this one would be right up there because it's kind of one of those movies that exist in the bubble of the 70s, and that it's a little weird. There's a very young Harrison Ford in it who plays the assistant of the director of the company that wants this tape. That director of the company is Robert Duvall. The film also stars John Cazale, Fredo from The Godfather. And it's just a really involving psychological thriller, and Gene Hackman's performance is fantastic. It's this really kind of tortured, shy guy. And a lot of people have drawn connections between this and Enemy of the State, because he plays kind of a similar character in that movie opposite Will Smith, as kind of a withdrawn guy. He's always wearing a transparent rain jacket, even when it's not raining. He's very paranoid about people listening in on him and finding out what he's doing. But it's really, really good. It's on Netflix. Watch Instant now. It's definitely one that you should put into your brain noggin. So
did you say your brain noggin?
Your brain noggin, yeah. You know, you watch things and they go in your brain noggin.
Really, just a top tier podcast. Right here. Last week was one of our best. This is one of our worst. Go on.
I wonder what that has to do with me.
Not enough Trumbore.
Being here or not being here.
You've ruined it. But yeah, the conversation. Watch it. It is a good film to put in your brain noggin.
All right. Dave, what movie should we
put? I want that on a t-shirt. Put it in your brain noggin.
Quick, Matt, come up with a rhyme for Coppola.
Coppola gives you Hopola.
Oh, God.
You asked.
Bad.
You asked on the spot. That was prompted, damn it. Dave,
it's a good thing we're not keeping a record of this.
I know, right? Good. Again, to the 324 people who are listening to this, you made your decision.
Hey, we've gone up like 10,000%, though. That's good. That's good for us.
That is good. That is good. All right, Dave, what about you?
My recommendation today is going to be 1981's An American Werewolf in London from writer-director John Landis. The reason I'm suggesting this one during our Oscar talk is because this was actually, it won an Oscar, obviously, for Best Makeup Effects for Rick Baker. It was his first of seven. The most recent one he won back in 2011 for, coincidentally, The Wolfman, which was a pretty awful movie, but I guess the effects were pretty good. I always found that kind of interesting that they more or less created the makeup effects Oscar more or less for Rick Baker, because they I think they looked at the nominees from the year previous, and The Elephant Man was in consideration for a lot of different things, but there was no award to give it for its fantastic makeup. Baker was not involved with that, to my knowledge, but there was no way that they could reward them other than giving them sort of a special consideration award. There was no Oscar for that, so it just so happened that the next year for the 1982 Academy Awards, Baker happened to win for special effects, best makeup. And if you watch An American Werewolf in London, you'll figure out why, because they do not try to hide the eventual transformation of one of the characters whatsoever. It's pretty much just, it's really well lit in just the middle of a room. There's nothing to hide behind, and it's just fantastic to watch. You can find the full transformation somewhere online if you just want to watch that, but honestly, the whole film is really worth watching. It's interesting to note that it's a John Landis film, and the two films he did before this were Blues Brothers and Animal House. So not exactly the director you would probably put first on your list to direct a straight-up horror movie. Even though this is listed as horror, it's fairly funny movie. There's a lot of funny lines. The dialogue in it is just very relaxed and very just sort of comfortable everyday people talking. The plot centers on these two American college kids who go on a backpacking trip basically through Britain. They don't make it real far until the werewolf gets a hold of them. But after that, it just kind of, I don't really want, it's not a buddy comedy whatsoever, but certain characters show up in ways that you don't expect, and it adds quite a bit to the twists and turns of the plot throughout the movie. So if you hadn't seen it, definitely go back and check it out, American Werewolf in London from 1981. Oh, and I do have to say, this is on Amazon Instant Watch. However, whatever happened in the transfer, it's super, super dark to watch. So like 2/3 of the movie are just completely like black. You really can't see anything. So if you can find it somewhere else, either on a VHS transfer from back in the day or a cleaner, maybe on the Blu-ray updated transfer, seek that out, because it ruined a little bit of the experience on Amazon. So boo to Amazon for that.
Boo, Amazon.
Thank you.
Never did anything good for anybody. Okay, cool. My recommendation will be 2003's Old Boy by Park Chan-wook. It has been remade by Spike Lee, and that remake will be released in a couple weeks.
Reinterpretation. It's a reinterpretation.
That is true. It is an adaptation of a manga of the same name. So, yes, it is a new adaptation. But this 2003 version is pretty definitive if you see it first. So see it first. It's a pretty powerful film, and it took me a few views to... The first time I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. And I kept coming back to it, and it just kept getting to me more and more. For those of you who aren't aware of the plot, it starts in 1988 where this businessman is named Odessa is kidnapped for apparently no reason. He's out drinking with friends. He's like, I gotta go get my daughter a gift. And he's drinking, and he's just kidnapped. He wakes up in this hotel room in solitary confinement. He's locked in. He's a prisoner, but it's not a prison. It's a like it's being in, stuck in a shitty hotel room. And he's kept there without explanation for 15 years. And then, just as mysteriously, he's put inside a giant trunk, left out in the open, and then he's out. And so now he's going to go look to get revenge on the person who captured him. And Park has just a unique style. If you saw Stoker earlier this year, that was his English language debut, and you can tell he's just got a very his visual style is very catching. It's haunting. It's also dark and strange. There's a great moment early on where Odessa, who's had nothing to eat but what they fed him, the same stale food from the same restaurant for the past 15 years, he goes in this one place, he's like, I want to eat something alive, and they give him a live squid or live octopus, and he just puts it in his mouth. It's alive. That's not a stunt. That's not fake. That actor really did put, and it's just slithering all over his face.
It was actually a Rick Baker effect.
It was a Rick Baker effect. It was Rick Baker's octopus.
It was a gummy.
It was a gummy. It was just a very, very lively gummy. So he's out, and then he tries to figure out who's after him, but then the question is raised, the question isn't, why did I kidnap you, but why did I let you go? And so it's a thriller with that tint, but it's got this very strange undertone to it. He's helped by this waitress that he meets and trying to find it. And then when he does find the guy, the motives turn. And it's a great breakdown of a revenge film. In fact, this is the second part of what became known as Park's Vengeance Trilogy, because the first part is Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy is the second film, and the third film is Lady Vengeance, and all three deal with revenge in different ways in terms of, you know, the instinct is someone wrongs me, I need to get revenge. And then it's like, but what is the limits of what that revenge does? You know, who is the cost? There's more than one player here. It's really examines the dynamic in a fascinating manner. But it also, this is just an entertaining film, and my question for Spike Lee's remake is thematically, what does it do? Because Spike Lee has his own style, and I'm sure with that cast it'll probably be entertaining. There's a big question in terms of what will happen in a certain scene involving a hammer. They both have that scene, but in Park's film it is a long uncut scene of Odessa wielding a hammer fighting down a hallway full of guys. It is unforgettable. It is amazing. And so when you see this film, you're going to be like, wow, Spike Lee kind of has his work cut out for him. And for a long time, I was like, the prospect of a remake of Oldboy just seemed pointless. I'm still not dubious, but skeptical about the remake. But at least having someone like Spike Lee behind it, a guy who also has his own style, like Park, is encouraging. But that film comes out in a couple weeks. In the meantime, you should check out 2003's Oldboy. Okay, thank you for listening, everyone, and our awful slogans and mottos and just terrible, terrible things. Boy, we're going to get it back on track next week when we talk about The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. You may recall that our very first podcast was about the first Hunger Games, and I think we can all agree we've really grown as human beings in that time. So we'll be looking at that film, which I'm hearing good things about. I'm hearing good things about Catching Fire, so that's exciting. If you want to keep up with this podcast, I have no idea why you would want to, but you can. You can follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
And Dave?
At Dr. Claw MD.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.
Stay hustling.